Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Generic Drugs and Patent Infringement Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 17, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Carrico Pharmaceutical Laboratories versus Novo Nordisk. This case involves drug manufacturer use codes, which are patent descriptions that brand name drug manufacturers submit to the Food and Drug Administration for use in determining whether a given generic drug, if approved for marketing, will infringe a patent held by a brand name manufacturer. The question in this case is whether a generic drug company can, in the course of a patent infringement suit brought by a brand name drug company, file a counterclaim challenging the accuracy of a particular use code. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held unanimously that a generic drug manufacturer may indeed challenge the use code in this manner. Justice Sotomayor filed a concurring opinion. To discuss the case, we have Gregory Dolan, who is an associate professor and the co-director of the Center for Medicine and Law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Dolan.
On April 17th, Supreme Court decided a case that came up on appeal from the U.S. Court of Appeals for Federal Circuit named Carrico Pharmaceutical versus Novo Nordisk. Unlike most cases that come up from the Federal Circuit, this was not a strict patent case. Rather, it was a case having to do with FDA regulatory authority over drugs. The issue in the case was whether or not a generic entrant to the market can force the FDA to change its listings for certain patents if those listings are inconsistent with the actual patent coverage. The basic factual setup of this case was as follows. Novo Nordisk was a holder of a number of patents for drug that was already approved and on the market. By law, any holder of patents who has a drug approval has to list those patents in an FDA publication, colloquially known as the Orange Book. Once a generic manufacturer wishes to enter the market and produce the same type of product that's already approved and that's already marketed as a brand, they have to certify to the FDA that either all the patents in question have already expired, or that generic will not enter the market prior to the expiration date of the patents, or what was at issue here, that the patents in question are in fact invalid. The last route is the one that Carrico took. The problem was that in the FDA Orange Book, the patent that was listed by Novo Nordisk, by the patent holder, was not so much invalid, but seemed to have covered broader applications than the actual patent language would permit. In the Orange Book, the patents are listed not just by their claims, but by the medical applications of the patents. And those applications can be broad or narrow depending on the patent language itself. What happened in Novo Nordisk is that the patent listed in the Orange Book listed a broader medical application than the actual patent language warranted. And the question presented to the Supreme Court was whether generic, as part of its lawsuit on validity of a patent, can force the FDA to change the listing, to change the medical application of the patent. The Federal Circuit ruled that it cannot. The Federal Circuit construed the relevant statute that allowed the generic to challenge the listing very narrowly. It said the generic can only force the FDA to remove patents that have absolutely nothing to do with the drug in question, or to correct erroneous patent numbers, but not actually to argue that the code is too broad or too narrow in its application. That presented certain problems, because what could happen is that the patent, though valid, did not cover certain uses that have already been in the public domain. The FDA, if the listing in the Orange Book was too broad, would not have approved generic market entry, despite the fact that under patent law, because the patent itself is actually not as broad as the code listed in the Orange Book, generic had perfect right to enter the market. Ultimately, the Supreme Court said that Congress intended in its 2005 amendment to the Food and Drug Act, known as Medicare Modernization Act, the Congress intended for the generic to be able to challenge the broad listings and to be able to get a court order for the FDA to modify them. On its surface, this seems like a big win for the generics because it would allow generics to actually enter the market when they are legally allowed to do so, when they actually don't violate the patent because the patent itself is narrower than the code. And that is what the Supreme Court has harped on in its opinion for quite some time, saying that Congress intended for the generics to enter the markets as early as possible. They intended to give generics the benefit of the doubt. They intended for the generics to be able to challenge patents and to challenge the overbreadth both of the patents and of the listing in the Orange Book, and ultimately consumers will benefit from these decisions. I have my doubts. The problem with this view that this is going to be a great boon to the generics is actually as follows. The way the law is written, and nobody has challenged that provision and nobody sort of disagrees with it, is that the generic can only challenge the FDA listing in a counterclaim when a suit was brought against them for infringing somebody's patent. They can then bring a counterclaim for modification. They do not have a freestanding right to challenge FDA's listing. As a result, the only time FDA may ultimately be subject to an order to change the listing as too broad was when the generic would be sued by a brand name manufacturer and then prevail in the court below. The reason why this particular approach is not going to get generics on the markets any faster is because under the current law, once a generic files its application to go to market with the FDA and get sued by the brand name, there's an automatic 30-month stay FDA approval process to give the court time to adjudicate the case on the merits. That does not change. It does not change whether generic brings this counterclaim or whether it does not bring the counterclaim. As a result, prior to Carrico decision, the generic had to pretty much wait for about 30 months before going on the market, and now they have to wait for at least 30 months before going on the market until the court decides. Ultimately, I suppose it gives a generic an extra weapon in its fight against the brand name manufacturer. But in terms of actually getting to the market faster and giving the consumers lower drugs, contrary to Supreme Court's discussion in the case, I don't think that will actually happen because of the statutory 30-month stay for all decisions on approving generic manufacturers' market entry. So ultimately, I think it's a decision that helps the generic. It helps focus the scope of the argument between the generic and the brand name manufacturer, and it certainly helps FDA industry rely on a correct record keeping between the patents and the Orange Book so that everybody is on notice what covers what and to what extent. But in terms of consumer benefits, it is marginal at best because ultimately the generic would have to wait 30 months or sometimes longer until the court issues its decision. And only if generic prevails after those 30 months can they enter the market. The mere fact that they have an opportunity to challenge the listing would not cause the FDA to approve their applications any sooner than it would have otherwise. So ultimately, I think the Supreme Court probably constructed the statute correctly. The Federal Circuit's reading was a bit inconsistent with the congressional purpose in enacting this provision allowing for counterclaims for correction of Orange Book listings. But at the end of the day, it's a case more interesting for construction of FDA or patent law.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.